I'm an amateur computer collector, and I'd like to talk to you about a system that I found a couple of years ago, which seems to be very much neglected, and I think it's quite significant in the development of the graphics workstation. Tektronix 4050 series was introduced in 1975, well before the idea of a graphics workstation had come into the public mind. It's hard to define exactly what a workstation is. I tend to think of it as being a high-performance personal computer. It's designed generally to be used by one person at a time. And I think one official definition said that it should have a megabyte of memory, a megapixel of graphics, and at least 1 million instructions per second for a processor. These Tektronix machines don't actually meet that criterion for high performance, but they are several years earlier than the first machines that did. The 4051 was the first machine to be introduced back in 1975. Intel had made microprocessors popular. Other manufacturers were jumping on the bandwagon. Tektronix seemed to have gone with Motorola. They produced an awful lot of stuff with 6800s in around that date. And as far as I can tell, it's not entirely clear. The 4051 was one such machine. They took one of their graphics terminals and put a 6800 processor board flat in the bottom of it. The one unusual feature, I think, of the Tektronix machines is the technology they use for the screen. The screen has about 750,000 addressable points, and yet the machine total only has 64K of memory. And the way they did it was by using a vector display. A number of machines in the early 70s had used vector displays, where you store a table of vectors and you just scan the electron gun in the tube along the vectors to draw out shapes on the screen. Tektronix went one stage further. They didn't even store the table of vectors. Tektronix at the time were well known, as they are now, as a manufacturer of oscilloscopes. And they had a very successful range of storage oscilloscopes, where they actually had a storage layer on the surface of the screen, which stored the electric charge from the electron gun. And with suitable arrangements of electrons and flood electron guns, which just flooded the whole screen with electrons, you could store a picture permanently on the screen. And in an oscilloscope, that's very useful because you could, back in the 70s, you could store something much more accurately and quickly using a storage screen than you could trying to capture it with an analog to digital converter. Tektronix took this technology and put it into their graphics computers, using the storage screen to store the vectors. So what's stored on the screen on that is not actually in the Tektronix memory at all. It only exists on the surface of the screen. Brief rundown of the features of the 4051. The far as I can tell, the processor is a 6800. I've never actually seen a 4051. And Tektronix, none of their documentation admits that it's a 6800. On the other hand, they were using 6800s. It's not really very easily easy to read, is it? They were using 6800s, and one piece of software that soon became available for the 4051 was a 6800 cross-assembler. So my guess is that a 6800 is what went into the 4051. Up to 32K of RAM, basic in ROM, built-in tape drive, and it cost not quite $7,000. But in the days when there were very few desktop computers, certainly very few desktop computers with graphics capabilities, that was actually quite a significant step forward. In 1979, Tektronix announced the 4052 and 4054. They had abandoned the idea of trying to run this machine with a microprocessor simply because that was too slow. They had designed a very neat 16-bit mini computer, which went on four PCBs in the bottom of the case. If we have time at the end of the talk, I'll show you what goes in the bottom of the machine. They doubled the amount of memory, so up to 64K. In theory, up to 64K. In fact, they only allow you 56K of RAM, 64K of ROM. It was still basically a basic machine, basic language in ROM, with a few additional functions which had to be an expansion ROM cartridge on the 4051. And that would have set you back $10,000. The 4054 was the big sister of the 4052. 19-inch screen with something like 12 million addressable points. Otherwise a very similar machine. Tektronix were claiming at the time they had the highest screen resolution and the fastest processor speed in the desktop industry. They didn't say much about whether they had the biggest memory, possibly because Hewlett-Packard had a machine with four times the memory. But the other thing they were claiming, as a desktop industry first, was 100% software compatibility between the three models. How did they achieve 100% software compatibility? I don't expect you to be able to read the whole of that. That's a block diagram of part of the 4052 processor. On the ALU board, which performs most of the processor functions, you have, if I can spot it, a microcode ROM controlling a group of four bit slice processor elements. Tektronix made provision for 4096 words of microcode. In fact, in the end, they only implemented 1K words of microcode. Um, but they introduced some very nice optimizations into the processor. The instruction register is a single byte, and instructions can be 1 byte, 2 bytes, or 3 bytes. This is a 16-bit machine, so what you have is you then have instructions which are coming halfway through a machine word. Most machines to cope with that would do 2 instruction fetches. They would fetch 1 word, discard the low 8 bits, fetch the next word, and use that. Tektronix went one better, and they duplicated the address bus. We have an address bus there, and an address bus there. And what Tektronix do is they fetch odd and even bytes simultaneously by sending different addresses to the odd and even memory banks. The memory management hardware, which is basically that board, also has to sort out things like plug-in ROM cartridges, which are only 8 bits wide and which are paged. And the result is that of the 4 PCBs in the bottom of the 4052, 2 of them are devoted to memory, 1 to the processor and 1 to I.O. The way they achieved software compatibility, I think, is completely disgusting. Tektronix have designed that a really nice machine. Fast mini computer, nicely optimized, and then they programmed it to emulate a Motorola 6800. As far as I can tell, what the microcode does is it implements Motorola 6800. They've discarded 1 instruction, the DAA instruction, which was a decimal adjustment to the accumulator for BCD addition. And they've added about a dozen new instructions, which as far as I can tell are mostly concerned with memory management and the double-sized address space. And what you have is you have an AMD 2901 bit slice processor chip, which has 16 general purpose registers. And they've put 4 of those in their computer. So it's 16-bit registers, and they've implemented a 6800 which has 2 8-bit accumulators, an index register, and a stack pointer. And to me, that looks like a late project. My guess is that the hardware engineers were given a brief to design something that would be faster than the 4051, and they took too long over it. So the software engineers just programmed it to emulate a 4051.
Was there noticeable speed improvement, even though you had a bad emulator?
The basic clock speed was 5 megahertz compared to, I think, 0.8 megahertz for a 6800. Additionally, your optimization of the 16-bit memory accesses meant you could save the clock cycle also on some instructions. Tektronix claimed, rough on average, 10 times the performance of a 4051 for the 4052. And I have spoken to, or rather I have spoken by email to people who say that, yes, the 4052 was significantly faster. In 1983, I think, personal computers of various sorts were becoming widespread. There were 1 or 2 very high-performance graphics workstations for the time. And the 4050 series were threatened. So Tektronix did an upgrade. Um, they added a lot of features to BASIC. They redesigned the I.O. card, and they claim on average a 20% increase in speed. So my guess is that they rewrote the BASIC interpreter, but I don't think they rewrote the microcode. Because if they'd done a proper job of rewriting the microcode, I think they could have made it a lot faster than that. This was very much the drowning man clutching at straws. By 1982, there were few machines on the market which you were expected to program in BASIC. Most of them you had compilers of various sorts, assemblers, you name it. The IBM PC was forcing its way to becoming the industry standard, and by the end of 1985, the 4050 series was dead.
I'd just like to say,
a few words about peripheral devices. All the 4050 series had a built-in tape drive using standard quarter-inch tape cartridges. They claim 300 kilobytes on a single cartridge. Those cartridges are generally sold in catalogues as having a capacity of 30 megabytes, so I don't think Tektronix were using the tape very efficiently. That tape format was very strange. Two tracks. A pulse on one track meant a 1, a pulse on the other track meant a 0. Pulses on both tracks were markers, and absence of pulses were record gaps and block gaps and things. The filing system was pretty primitive as well. No file names. You format the tape and it will record blank files on it, and then you can fill them with data. You can format part of a tape. But if you make a file too long, it will overwrite the next file on the tape, and the system will get into difficulties next time you try and access it. Another machine I haven't seen. Tektronix 4907 was a disk drive for the 4050 series. Doesn't show up very well in this picture, but there were two boxes. The one on the right in the picture, by the way, is supposed to be a 4051. There were two boxes. One looked like this one on the left, which had the disk controller and one drive. And you could also get a disk drive expansion box, which contained two more drives. They were 8-inch drives, single-sided, double density, about 0.6 of a megabyte on each disk, which for the 1970s was pretty good. Finally, essential for a graphics system, printers and plotters. The 4631 was a machine that Tektronix already had available on a number of their graphics terminals. It actually scanned the storage layer on the inside of the screen, and I don't know the physics of this, but by measuring beam current, it could deduce what charge there was and output it as a raster to a printer. So it therefore read exactly what was displayed on the screen, despite the fact that that's not actually stored anywhere in the machine. It used thermal photographic paper, which actually contains quite a lot of silver in the emulsion and is very expensive. A deck LA180 by any other name. Standard impact dot matrix printer. And finally, the 4662 plotter. That was a flatbed pen plotter. Took 11 by 17 paper. Had a lot of firmware on board, which responded to the same graphics commands as the system. And I think that's just about all I have to say about hardware. If anybody is interested, I have the machine here, and I can demonstrate whatever features you like, if you'd like to come and gather around.
I have a question. The main purpose of the machine was to connect to a mainframe.
It was often used that way, but I think the intention was to move away from a graphics terminal connected to a host and become a standalone desktop machine with its own processing power. I think quite a number of machines were sold in both applications.
How did you address the memory that the display memory supported on the
Well, there isn't display memory as such. What you have on the display circuitry is you have digital to analog converters, which actually scan the electron gun in a vector, and it draws that vector on the screen, and it stays there. It's the electronic equivalent of a pen plotter. Any more questions, or want to come and have a look at the machine, or?